Thanks. As Nick mentioned, I'm going to talk about entanglement entropy of scalar fields and causal set theory. And this is based on some work with Raphael Sorkin. So I'll begin by saying a few general things about entanglement entropy and about causal set theory. Then I will introduce the definition of entropy that we work with. This is different from the usual definition that people work with. And it has more of a space-time and Lorentz invariant nature. It is also applicable to both causal sets and to continuum spacetimes. Then I will show a specific application of this definition to two-dimensional causal sets. And in this setting, we actually find the surprising result initially that the entanglement entropy obeys the space-time volume law instead of the conventional spatial area law that one expects to get. And then finally, I will show you how, by a modification of the causal set calculation by a truncation scheme, we can recover the usual area law in the causal set case. So one of the main motivations for thinking about entanglement entropy and quantum gravity is the question of black hole entropy and whether or not all of it or most of it is entanglement entropy. The earliest works conjecturing that this might be the case are due to Raphael, and since then many others have thought about it as well, and we don't have a final answer to this yet. Now, in causal set theory, we would also like to address this question. And for those of you not familiar with causal set theory, causal set theory is an approach to quantum gravity where the deep structure of space-time is discrete and causal structure is fundamental. Now, what a causal set itself is it's a set of space-time elements along with an ordering relation, which is the causal relations amongst those points. And together, they satisfy a set of rules, which I won't go into. This is what a typical two-dimensional causal set looks like that is well approximated by a causal diamond in two-dimensional Minkowski spacetime. So as you can see, it just looks like a random lattice. And all the causal sets that I'll be talking about today look more or less like this one. Also, let me briefly review what the usual definition of entanglement entropy is before I tell you about the definition that we work with. So the usual story is that the entropy is identified with this expression involving a trace of this expression involving density matrix rho on a hypersurface sigma. Now, if we take this hypersurface sigma, like in this figure, and if we divide it into two complementary subregions, region A and region B, and if we trace out the degrees of freedom in one of these regions, either one, for example, the ones in the degrees of freedom in region B, we end up with what's called a reduced density matrix for region A. And if we plug this back into this formula, we end up with an entropy which is referred to as the entanglement entropy between region A and region B, if the original density matrix was pure. Now, this definition doesn't work for a causal set because we don't have a notion of data on a hypersurface. We don't have this density matrix on a hypersurface. But even if it did work, this definition actually has a weakness in that it is not covariant. Because essential to getting a finite answer for this entanglement entropy is a definition of a UV cutoff. And when the definition is done in this way with the density matrix on a hypersurface, our UV cutoff is also being chosen on this hypersurface. So it's a spatial UV cutoff. Therefore, it's not covariant. Now, fortunately, the definition that I'm going to now tell you about has the advantage that not only does it work for causal sets in addition to continuum spacetimes, but it allows one to work with spacetime UV cutoffs. So in that sense, it's more covariant. For details of the definition, I'll refer you to this reference. I'll just briefly state the definition. And it's so far been developed for a Gaussian theory of a scalar field, I believe with a fermionic generalization soon to appear. But I'm going to be just talking about the scalar fields. So the basic idea is to express the entropy in terms of two-point correlation functions of the field in a region of space-time. Let me introduce W and delta. W is called the Whiteman function, and it's basically the two-point correlation function of the field theory. Delta is called the Pauli-Jordan function, sometimes also called the causal propagator. And it is basically the commutator of the field operator. So when we have these two functions, W and delta, the definition for the entropy is this sum over eigenvalues lambda to this generalized eigenvalue problem involving W and delta. And it's important that we exclude functions in the kernel of delta. This will be key to what I'll talk about in a few slides, so keep this in mind. And furthermore, if W and delta are restricted to smaller subregions of space-times within a larger subregion of space-time or an entire region of space-time or a causal set, the entropy that you get out of this formula would be an entanglement entropy.
Yes. Dumb question. The left hand side, W is a scalar, but on the right hand side, the Pauli-Jordan is an operator, right?
They are both operators.
How come?
So I'm actually going to tell you what W is in terms of delta in the next slide, so it'll be clear.
Okay, yeah, just, I mean, the question is because you have an expectation value, vacuum expectation value.
Yeah, so you can put an expectation value on the commutator as well. Yeah, it's a C number, so it doesn't matter what state it's in. So the choice of vacuum state that we work with is called the Sorkin-Johnson vacuum, or the SJ vacuum for short. And it is defined as follows. If we take the Pauli-Jordan function and if we expand it in terms of its positive and negative eigenfunctions and eigenvalues, then the definition of the SJ-Whiteman function is just to take the restriction to the positive eigenspace of this delta operator. Now, with every choice of a Whiteman function or a two-point function, there comes a choice of a vacuum state. So our choice of vacuum state is the one that comes with this choice of Whiteman function. In practice, we just need to work with this two-point function. We never actually deal with the vacuum state itself. Now, this is the causal setup that we study. We have a smaller causal set causal diamond within a larger causal set causal diamond. I'm going to label the half side length of the larger one with capital L and the half side length of the smaller one with curly L. I'm going to fix the ratio of the sizes of these two diamonds, and I'm going to vary the number of elements I'm going to sprinkle in them. So the UV cutoff is the discreteness scale. In 2D, that means it's square root of the density. And since I'm holding fixed the sizes of these diamonds, the UV cutoff is just going to be proportional to square root of the number of elements in these space-time regions. Now we know what W and delta look like in the setup. Those are the two ingredients we need for the entanglement entropy computation. Delta can also be expressed as the difference between the retarded Green function and its transpose. The retarded Green function for a massless theory in the causal set is just one half the causal matrix, where the causal matrix is just a matrix where we put a 1 whenever two elements are causally related and a 0 otherwise. And for W, we choose the SJ-Whiteman function that I just told you about. What this plot below shows is an agreement between the SJ-Whiteman function in the causal set and continuum cases. So the solid black line is the SJ-Whiteman function in the continuum versus proper distance. And the blue scatter of dots is the causal set one. So they agree fairly well. The retarded Green functions in the causal set and continuum agree identically, so I'm not showing a plot of that. Now, carrying through the entanglement entropy calculation, this is the result that we get. We have linear growth of the entropy against the number of elements in the space-time region. I'm plotting it versus the number of elements in the smaller diamond, but it's linear against either number of elements. And this is a space-time volume law because the volume of a space-time region in a causal set grows with the number of elements in that region. So this linear scaling with n is a space-time volume law. Now the expectation in 1 plus 1 dimensions that we have a spatial area law would mean that we're expecting a logarithmic growth with the number of elements. Specifically, we're expecting a logarithmic growth with the UV cutoff, which is proportional to square root n, and logarithmic growth with square root n means logarithmic growth with n itself. Yes?
Does this depend on exactly where the regions are in the space-time? You have a small diamond, is that a big diamond? Do I just put a triangle in there or include all the cost of past or something?
Right, so what matters is that the Cauchy surface of that domain of dependence of the smaller region lie within the Cauchy surface of the domain of dependence of the larger region. So these are concentric diamonds. That's only when you would expect this. In general, it's not known what you would expect.
So they both have to be diamonds, the smaller one as well?
They don't actually have to be diamonds. They just have to be domains of dependence of those diameters of the diamonds.
Okay.
Yeah. You can slightly deform it and still contain the entire diameter, and you would still expect an area law. So this was a result that puzzled us for a long time. It persisted for higher dimensions and for the massive theory, and what additionally made it puzzling was that the same calculation in the continuum led to spatial area law. So it's not an aspect of working with this definition of entropy. It's an aspect of working with causal sets. Now, finally, we traced this extra entropy to the near zero but finite part of the spectrum of delta. Remember, I told you that it's important that we exclude functions in the kernel of delta. But this is actually a bit tricky to do in the causal set, because if you look at its spectrum, it has a whole bunch of small, finite eigenvalues. And it's not clear whether these are actually there or kernel solutions that, because of discreteness and so on, is coming out finite. And these contribute to the entropy both because there are a lot of them and because the eigenvalues that go into the entropy formula can also be expressed as the eigenvalues of this operator. And the inversion of delta here makes it so that small eigenvalues in delta actually contribute to very large in magnitude eigenvalues that go into the entropy. Now, it turns out that if we force the magnitude of the smallest eigenvalue of delta in the causal set to be square root n over 4 pi, we are mimicking what we found in the continuum, and we recover the same results that we had in the continuum. And just in brief, the reason for this is that the spectrum of delta in the continuum and causal set can be related by a density factor, just by dimensional grounds. And furthermore, we know that analytic form for the spectrum of delta in the continuum, it's just the length of the region over a momentum. And in the high momentum limit, it's just length square over pi n, where n is a mode number. And we impose our UV cutoff as choosing a highest mode number, n max. Now, with this choice of minimum eigenvalue, if we do the conversion, we get L square over pi square root n, n number of elements in the causal set. And this is analogous to a highest mode number. So in this sense, these two eigenvalues and their relation to the UV cutoff in the continuum and causal set agree well with each other with this choice. Just a subtlety I'll quickly highlight is that this truncation needs to be done twice. Once in the bigger diamond, and then after a restriction to the smaller diamond, once again in the smaller diamond. Let me just show you the final result that we get once we carry out this truncation scheme. So now we have the entropy growing logarithmically with the square root of the number of elements in the smaller region. This is the expected logarithmic scaling. And moreover, we get a coefficient of the log, which is consistent with the coefficient of 1/3 that we expect to get in the 1 plus 1 dimensional case. So, should I go back? Yes.
Is there physical motivation for that cut off? I mean, the way you presented this, we cut it up there so that the right result comes out.
So the idea is that we're forcing the size of the kernel of delta to be as big as it was in the continuum.
Should appear as a limit out of the theory, right?
And furthermore, what we knew from the continuum theory was, given a cutoff, what is the expected smallest magnitude of your eigenvalue of delta that you should have? Now, in the causal set, we know what our cutoff is. So we would expect it naturally to come out as the magnitude of the smallest eigenvalue to naturally come out as what we expect, given that this is our cutoff. But it happens that we have a whole bunch of smaller ones, so we're just removing those by hand. But there is a correspondence between cutoff of the theory and smallest magnitude of eigenvalue. It's just not happening automatically. We're having to do it additionally by hand. It's not the most elegant prescription, but it's what we need to do for agreement with the continuum. And I mean, of course, there's still the open question of whether this extra entropy is something physical. This is just a prescription for getting agreement with what we expect in the continuum.
I have two questions. One is the kernel of this delta somehow related to PhD discipline? And the second is, could you interpret the cutoff as some sort of UV cutoff?
So the cutoff is a UV cutoff. And the number of non-kernel parts in delta basically corresponds to the your degrees of freedom in solutions to the wave equation. So if you have more degrees of freedom, there's some redundancy there. You don't have all independent degrees of freedom.
So somehow the gauge degrees of freedom are the same as the degrees of freedom above the UV cutoff.
So somehow you have redundant degrees of freedom. So given a UV cutoff, there's a certain number of degrees of freedom that you expect. It's now in the continuum, it's easier to have that come out by itself. In the causal set, you need to remove these redundancies with this truncation scheme, basically. There's Vasu was before you, I think.
So, but this redundancy is not gauge because this is like a scalar field in principle, right? So this is something additional to what would in principle just be gauge redundancy of the
I mean, I guess it's the solutions to the Klein-Gordon equation.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to ask one thing. So I'm a little confused. You say that you get a volume law, and then you kind of put a cutoff, like a UV cutoff, and then you get an area law. So the volume law, so you're saying that the UV gives you volume law contributions, but shouldn't UV effects only come into play at the boundary of your region?
That's why the usual expected result is to get an area law. And that's why I said this was a surprising result that we got. So somehow there are extra contributions that are not just boundary contributions coming in. Now, whether or not these are physical things or not is still an open question. Yeah.
So what's the main reason that you have to remove this by hand? Is it telling you something deeply about causal set theory, or it's the definition that you're using for what entanglement entropy?
Well, the main reason we did it was that, I mean, there are many indications that you expect to get an area law. And furthermore, entanglement entropy by itself, it has this fundamental property that whether you compute it in the one region or its complement, it has to give equal answers. And you can only get that happening if it's a boundary effect, if you have an area law. So the fact that we were getting a volume law either meant that it's not some kind of entanglement entropy. And also we wanted to see what is the limit in which we can recover these other results, like the continuum result that okay.
So let me ask you the following. The definition that you're using for entanglement entropy,
mm-hmm.
it makes sense in the continuum as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does it reduce to the usual measures
yes.
of entanglement that we think of?
Yes. So if I had more time, I would first go over that continuum calculation. But I just showed you the causal set one. Yes, everything
okay, then
behaves.
Isn't there then a problem with causal theory or causal set theory?
Well, it depends if this extra entropy is physical or not. And furthermore, I've shown you a scheme for removing that extra part. So either way, whether or not it's physical, there is a way to deal with it. And yeah, I agree. It would be better if it naturally came out to give us the area law, but it's more subtle than that. Yeah.
Let's thank our speaker.
Okay.